Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae,
proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Welcome back to Future Proof on News Talk. This is our weekly science program here on the station. I hope you're enjoying it. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us science@newstalk.com. Now, GMO foods are, of course, a controversial subject. A lot of people would seem a little reluctant to consume something that has been altered or re-engineered by humans. The only problem with that logic is that almost everything you can buy to eat in your local supermarket, apples, oranges, everything has been engineered to some degree, including that humble apple in your lunchbox. And Kate Evans is professor in the Department of Horticulture at Washington State University. They make a lot of apples. And she's the woman behind a whole new breed. It's called the Sunflare. She joins me now. Kate, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to join you and talk about apples.
Yeah. So apples, have they changed a lot since before, since I don't know, when they were fully natural and we hadn't, you know, even thought about crossbreeding or anything? Like, are apples dramatically different in the same way as a chihuahua is dramatically different to a wolf?
Yeah, well, you know, in some parts, right? So the apple itself, if you think about why the tree produces an apple, the whole point is for the seed to spread, right? That's what a tree wants to do. Mm. That's why we have an apple. And so the evolutionary perspective of that tree is, well, you have to make the apple attractive for people to eat or for animals to eat, so those seeds get spread. So in the big scheme of things, then, yeah, you know, an apple is an apple. We want to be able to eat it. But certainly from the wild apples that were around in Europe, most of those are very small crab apple types. And that's not what we're seeing, and we want to eat, right? We want something that's a little tastier than that.
Yeah. And so I mean, did sweet apples just not exist at all? Because I'm wondering how we went from, you know, bitter apples of olden days to something as incredibly sweet as a pink lady. Like, did we not need sweet apples to breed with the bitter apples to get something like the pink lady?
Absolutely, yeah. So the sweet apple origins are mostly from the sort of Kazakhstan area, that
really?
Part of the world. Yeah, really interestingly, the perspective is that they spread through the Silk Route, you know, that whole sort of trafficking of materials that moved across into Europe. And that's really where we got the sweet apples from. And still, the wild type of apples, Malus sieversii, is the species that is out in Kazakhstan, still in forests there, are typically a little larger than our the crab apple types that we know, and they're often quite sweet.
Yeah, and so the sweetness that we have, that's come from essentially crossbreeding. There's not too much. I mean, sorry, I always have to preface that question because there always is way more to learn about it than I thought. But I was going to say, there's not really much to think about when it comes to how we have modern apples, in that we just crossbreed one plant with another and get a slightly sweeter or a slightly redder or a slightly less pippy fruit. Is that right?
I like your term in it. We just do that. Yes. Yeah. We just do that. But
is that hard? Is it a hard thing to do?
Well, it's, you know, technically the actual process of cross hybridization is not difficult. I mean, that is what the bee is doing all the time. It's just that, you know, me as a plant breeder and other plant breeders, what we're doing is we're trying to do that in a controlled way. So we're looking at choosing two parent varieties that we would consider combined together have got the sort of characteristics that we would like to see in an improved offspring. So therefore we're taking pollen from one parental variety and just dusting it onto the flowers of the other, and then patiently waiting for that fruit to be produced, and the seeds inside that fruit are what we want, because those are half maternal and half paternal. It's sexual reproduction, basically. And then my job is growing those seeds up. The tough bit is choosing the two parents, right? What are your targets? Choose your two parents and then grow those seeds up. and do a lot of evaluation to ultimately select the best individual, because I'm not changing those seeds in any way. My job is not the engineering side. It is pure selection after a lot of evaluation.
But how many times can you actually do that in a human lifetime, given that like, these are apple trees, right? They don't grow overnight. You know, when you're selecting trees for breeding, you have to wait a number of years before they are even close to letting you know what sort of fruit they bear, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I can make new crosses every year because, you know, apple trees bloom every year.
Yeah.
But yes, you're absolutely right. A seedling tree will take a number of years, maybe 5 to 6 years under normal circumstances to start to bloom and fruit.
And so with, say you have a strong candidate and you want to make it better, do you have the one seed of a strong candidate and then just make 50 different trees? And then pick the best one out of those 50, but like 50 different species? Or is it really controlled in terms of what you make? Do you need a lot of individuals to be able to get a general gist? Because of course there's variability among individuals. Like the banana is of course a clone of all other bananas, but they don't all come out the same. So do you need to like breed, say, 50 different types of a certain crossbreed to have an idea of what you can generally expect from an apple?
Yeah, well, apples are very diverse, incredibly diverse. So when we make a cross hybridization, we usually are looking at thousands of seeds.
Oh, wow.
Certainly hundreds, if not a couple of thousand, is a pretty decent target.
But you would actually plant 1,000 sweet seeds?
I typically would plant, my annual planting is somewhere around about 5,000 or 6,000 trees.
Wow.
And often about 10,000 seed.
Wow. Okay, that's so, a lot. Yeah.
It
you must
is,
love apples.
The majority of them are awful. I mean, you
oh, really?
Seriously.
Oh, that's
yeah,
so funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you're starting off with a strong candidate. Why are the majority of them awful?
Well, just because there are so many characteristics within that apple that we want as human consumers to have that great eating experience. And because the apple is so diverse, because we've got these crabapple type genes floating around in there as well, we need to just always select those out.
I love zonkies. I don't know if you're familiar with the zonkey. It's a cross.
Is that
between
a zebra donkey?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And the most what the hell fact I ever learned was that the grandfather of Alfred Cubby Broccoli, he basically made broccoli a thing. He wasn't the person that first bred the pea and the cauliflower together to make broccoli, but he did. And of course that family went on to make all the Bond movies. But this guy basically bred peas and cauliflowers together to make broccoli. And broccoli did not exist like 150, 200 years ago. Isn't that right? Absolutely crazy story to me. And every time I tell people, even looking at Aiden, the producer's face, he's like, what? This is true. Can you do that with apples? Like, could we have an apple pear thing, or an apple orange mix, or is there limitations to the sort of breeding mix that you can make happen?
There are definitely limitations. It's not so. I am recalling probably about 20, 30 years ago, a colleague of mine when I was working in East Malling in the UK actually did some breeding of apples and pears together.
No way.
And got a few very sickly seedlings. He called them Pymar, Pyrus malus, that's pear apple. They struggled to live. And that's the challenge, is even if you get a viable seed, getting a good, strong, healthy plant out of some of these weird, diverse crosses is very difficult.
It sounds like your friend did not have the diligence that you had, Kate. You're out there putting 6,000 trees in the ground every single day. This guy just had a few goes and was like, yeah, no, that's not going to work. Honestly, I mean, the fact that he even managed to get something sounds like there's huge potential there. So spin out, we've identified the spin out now. So Kate, let's go back to the real world for a moment, if we can. So this Sunflare is a new type of variety that's come out of your breeding program. So you've basically bred this together. We haven't talked about CRISPR. We might talk about it in a while, but let's just talk about just natural breeding and crossbreeding. So it takes you a long time. You found something called the Sunflare. What is special about this particular breed?
So You know, what I am looking for of new varieties that are the consumer's going to want to eat. So, I mean, it's got a great combination of sweetness and tartness and a nice, firm, crisp, juicy texture. But I'm also looking for potential varieties that work as far as the grower is concerned and the supply chain. So what one thing that is great about sunflower is that it stores incredibly well in refrigerated storage, so that as a supply chain product, it's available for a long time. But for a consumer, that means it's a great eating experience for 12 months of the year.
Mm.
And also from a grower perspective and from a, you know, just a general sustainability perspective, we can get the majority of fruit from the orchard into the hands of the consumer. In other words, there are no weird disorders or sort of susceptibility to rots and things that appear that really just kind of mean that you have to leave fruit in the orchard because it has a problem, or that fruit fails along the way in terms of reducing its quality.
So why sunflower?
The name?
Yeah.
Yeah. So interestingly, for sunflower, we did a competition within the state. We got about 17,000 entries.
Wow.
Yeah, right. One of us, like me, had an extremely large Excel spreadsheet that I seem to remember I sat on a plane flying from Heathrow to Seattle looking through 17,000 name entries. The fruit itself is a yellow background apple with a pink blush. And so it obviously was made somebody think about the whole, you know, the sun and the sunrise and all of those kind of colours.
But it's not particularly resistant to increased heat or increased climate change?
It is suitable for our climate out here in Washington, and we are certainly a little more extreme than many other places. But I think that it's remiss to say that anything is future-proof, right, in terms of apple.
Yeah. And so that's great. So the idea is that you have this apple that is adaptive to the Washington state sort of climate, because most of the apples that were being grown in Washington state, my understanding is, were not from there. And so this is a sort of an apple that works in this environment, is robust, doesn't go as brown as easily, and lasts long on the shelf.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, that's great. I'm imagining one of those 17,000 names was Apple McAppleface. Am I correct in saying that?
Well, not from Washington State.
Oh, no. Really? You
know, people over here have got a whole different sense of humor.
Oh, okay. I'm really surprised. I had one of those people did put that in. So, so with CRISPR, CRISPR is a way of doing this in a much quicker way using genetically enhanced methods, right? So CRISPR allows you to edit or turn off certain genes that aren't necessarily useful. Why did you not choose to take this approach to creating your apple? Because surely that would be a much quicker way of creating the best possible fruit.
Yeah. You know, the thing about CRISPR is that what it does is you're dealing with a variety that is already known, already out there. And you are, as you say, just editing one or two factors, a gene at a time. One of the challenges with apple is knowing which genes to edit. There is a reasonable size community of researchers in apple across the world, and we've made a lot of progress in terms of understanding its genome, for example. But compared to other crop species like wheat, we are a drop in the ocean in terms of the number of scientists. Mm. So understanding and really working out specifically which genes to target, we're really not quite there yet. And for me, you know, I am a plant breeder. My whole passion is to produce new, unique varieties. Mm. And so I always think, well, where would I start if I was just manipulating a current variety for just one thing? There are so many things that one could improve.
Yeah.
So,
well, no, I mean, the Pink Lady is pretty much the pinnacle of breeding, in my opinion. The Pink Lady is a fantastic apple. Top of the apple pyramid for me. So I would love to try the sunflower next time I'm in Washington State. But you have a big mountain to climb, I would say. Have you had a Pink Lady?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yes.
They're pretty
yes,
good.
Yes. And it is a parent. It's a parent of Sunflare.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, then, so this could be like, this could be very exciting. This could be, you know, Zeus creating Hercules or something. This could be very exciting. So I just want to go back to this idea because it's so exciting to hear that someone actually did cross an apple with a pear. And I'm wondering, if you think of it like daddy bean and mommy cauliflower, if you think of those two plants, they are so, on the face of it, so ridiculously unsuitable for breeding, you would imagine. And yet they created a new plant. I'm wondering, why haven't we done more experimental crossbreeding of fruit? Because there's so many exciting potentials, I would have thought. Like raspberries and apples. Like, is that just stupid? But like, you might say, yeah, that's ridiculous. But actually, peas and cauliflower is ridiculous.
It all just depends on how closely related they are as to whether or not you would get any fertile offspring. That's the simple it, right?
Yeah.
You know? And we might think that they're really similar because they're fruit, but in fact they're really
no. And
not.
Berries are very different to fruit. And I know those people are shouting at the radio now, but
absolutely.
But I feel like there is definite like blackberries and raspberries is probably an overlap there. There's, I just feel like we could be a little bit more creative.
Well, I think that in terms of blackberries and raspberries, the breeders are incredibly creative. I mean, there are also black raspberries and various other.
Are there? You have just opened a whole new world to me of pears and apple mixes and black raspberries. I'm very excited.
There are also apricot coloured raspberries.
Oh, really? Oh, I think I have seen them. But the colour, I suppose, I just feel like, we could do more. Sorry, I realized this is a science program and I'm being like a 5-year-old. I'm sorry. I just ran away with an idea. Really interesting speaking with you. Thanks for your time and tolerating such a ridiculous interview. Kate Evans is a professor in the Department of Horticulture at Washington State. Kate, I hope you can forgive me.
Yeah, you're fine. It's fun.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.